Good evening. It's 5:30 in the UK and it's 6:30 in Stockholm, where my guest this week we find in a hotel room at the end of a long day, where I now have told him that he is just having a 30-minute conversation with a friend rather than being in the spotlight. Good evening, Petter. How are you?
Good evening, Tom. Good to see you. I'm good, thanks. Nice to land here with you and explore some stuff on what comes next, huh?
Cool. So tell us, tell the guests, and well, sorry, tell the audience a little bit about yourself. Perhaps your memory as to how you and I met years ago, and then also what you've been doing and what you're up to now, and then we can explore from there.
Yeah, cool. Well, yeah, so I'm Petter. I'm from Sweden. I live in Jönköping, close to Älmhult, where it's the headquarters of IKEA. And that has been my kind of corporate journey for the last almost 2 decades. I've been working at Inter IKEA Group, which is the franchisor in the IKEA system, with people and culture related stuff and transformations, sustainability, change, basically. And that's the realm of my professional realm. And today I'm running Village. I'm the founder and CEO of Village, which is a people and culture partner. And I try to, support companies to grow sustainably by the insights and learnings I've gotten from my quite long tenure at IKEA. So that's a short day about the professional side, if you may. And then the big passion of mine is music. I've been playing music all my life. I'm a pianist and singer, play some guitar and saxophone, but last 10 years, mainly choir and choir conducting. I'm believing in IKEA choir. And through that experience, I realized that there's plenty to explore in their intersection between art and business and specifically music then. And I think that is a super exciting field. And it stems from founding the IKEA choir, and then people coming there with tensions, stress from a busy day, coming there with lunch, singing 45 minutes together. Inhale a smoothie to get time to get back to the next meeting, but still they do it. And I heard a lot of stories from them, and they're really like, okay, I thought I was too stressed to do it today, but then I realized that's why I have to come, because I'm stressed and they leave then. Nice to explore that from a research perspective, what it does to us. And then it's a lot of amazing stuff happens when you sing together. So basically, that is what I'm exploring now, that interface, the transformative space that art offers, and how important that is in terms of unlocking the full potential of being human at work, at home.
Cool. So you've been, and you see, you're exploring that. You've been. You went out on your own, what, a year or two ago?
Yeah, I was as soon a year ago.
What, a year ago? So, after a year, so I think many people will be interested in what does it feel like to be a year into being an entrepreneur after a couple of decades in a large corporate?
Oh, yeah, that's been a journey, right? Really, doing the corporate journey for me was at the beginning so much freedom. Autonomy. I could go where the energy was, and I'm meeting whomever. No endless 8 to 5 alignment meetings. And I need to say that I've been loving working at IKEA, but I really needed to get this space to form myself, my thoughts around what to do next, and then how to pursue this dream of starting an own company. After a while, this energy and an opportunity, endless opportunities, kind of like a sliding plane turned into a blues in the autumn. because you're not really belonging to a group or a team or colleagues, or having to chat by the coffee machine, or the phone goes silent. What do you do? And I have this quite high social need, and everyone has this psychological basic need of affinity and belonging. So it was quite a tough journey. So I signed up first at a co-working space, and then actually I became a, call it, practitioner in residence at the local university. This was a great opportunity for me, going into, I took my business and the village, which is a people and culture partner, to Jönköping International Business School, which is a well-renowned business school now, on the top 100 list at Financial Times. I take my clients there. I have researchers on my doorstep, if not every day, but and engage in serendipitous conversations about succession in family planning to esports, So that is a quite vibrant, dynamic international environment, which I recognize from my time at IKEA.
Okay, so that was useful. So how far would you say you've got in the transition from senior corporate executive to thriving entrepreneur?
Well, I start to think what I saw in the autumn, because I set out to meet 100 people in 100 days, where I think that I didn't met before. I think it was Roland Harwood that introduced that idea to me. So I met 100 people to get 100 fresh perspectives on the business, on the industry, locally, etc. And those conversations led to other conversations, and open doors. And it's fantastic to see how generous people are with the time. And then people that went before me, doing their own corporate journey and had come a bit longer, shared openly and generously their perspectives on how to do it. So it was very helpful. And kind of the more people you meet, over time, things start to unfold in ways that is leading you to your long-term ambition and target, and kind of. But the first year is quite tough, because organizational development is a relational thing. It's highly dependent on trust, and you need to build that trust with those business owners. You don't want anyone to come in to do stuff in your company that you don't. So now things start to roll a bit, actually. And it was a lot of meeting people, engaging in conversations, networks, etc., until now. But it starts to take shape, and then it continuously develop, right? Different stages.
Really interesting. And in terms of the social side and the 100 people in 100 days, and my own experience when I moved to London about 7 years ago, is I was pretty clear on what my skill sets were and also what I wanted to narrow my focus to, like what I want to do. And it feels like speaking to you a while ago, you're pretty clear on what you will be offering as a people and culture partner. So then it becomes a matter of, well, how do I move from point A to point B? And my version of this was I moved to a new city I'd never lived in, which is London, and said I just want to meet interesting people doing interesting things. And London's a highly transactional city in my experience. So, it was like took people a while to realize, oh, he's not actually looking for anything right now. He just wants to create space for serendipities and stuff. So that's part from me. And then I've had over 100 guests on this podcast, and two of them that immediately come to mind to connect the dots is there's a guy called Mark Wynne in Guernsey. And he is absolutely famous for building communities around cups of coffee, like just having coffee with people. And another one is a woman who moved from London to Amsterdam during the pandemic, Sharon O'Day, who works in, and I guess there'll be a Venn diagram overlap somewhere in the work that she does to what you're doing. But she's very active on Twitter, and she talks about meeting 100 new people every year, right? And after being, so Yeah, there's some commonality. So there's some, just some proven experiences. So it's good to hear that things are beginning to roll for you as a culture and people partner. I'm really fascinated in the passion you have around music and choirs. And I've sung in a choir myself, but not for a long time. But there is something about, there's been a lot done and said pre-pandemic and now after pandemic when, of communal choirs, for example, those who actually don't care how well you sing, right? It's like they just get together and have the communal experience.
Yeah.
But generally for me, what pops for me is, in a less specific sense, is the finding something that's completely unrelated to what you do professionally, but that you're passionate about. And it's a really good, you mentioned about stress relief for people in their lunch break. But it's not only that. I find it an amazing, neurologically, an amazing problem-solving tool. So, if, for example, if you're running a choir or you're the conductor, so you're managing the energy of everybody. But if you're in there and you have to learn a part, or you have to take a note or take an instruction, you have to learn all of that. So, when I have a client and I work as a coach to individuals, and they're stuck, I'll often say, okay, go do something completely different, right? And then come back to it tomorrow. And they'll go, you know what? So there's a phrase, solvitur ambulando, it's solved by walking. Go for a walk, or just literally sleeping on it will solve problems. My personal one is, I've started basketball coaching again for the first time in about 20 years. And I used to be a basketball player. And I love it. 3 hours with juniors every Thursday night from 6 till 9, when I would otherwise be quite tired. I tell you, it passes in 5 minutes every single Thursday. It's just because I'm passionate about it. It doesn't solve the problem for me, but it takes me away from what I'm doing. And following your passion is not selfish. It can actually help you do your job better. It's my thought.
Absolutely.
So
Yeah.
you've been able to have perhaps a little bit more time in the last year to pull on some different threads, such as the music and the choir. What have you learned? And again, the what comes next? So from both your own evolution into an entrepreneur and the intersection of art and business, what are you seeing is coming next for you? What will you be doing next?
Yeah, and that is actually the field I will explore and do more of and try new perspectives on, because I've just scraped the surface there. And if to build on your point and like art as a perspective changer, that is, you from the perspective of the periphery, you see other things. It challenges status quo, and then creative artists often do that, and it changes those perspectives. So I want to explore that not only from a choir perspective or music perspective, but from maybe a jazz perspective, which is interesting by itself, with all these improvisational competences needed, this innovative organization called a jazz trio or quintet or quartet or something. They need really to embrace the uncertainty and say yes to the mess and all that Frank Behrer talked about, and co-creating on the spot. And that kind of qualities is needed in leadership in general. So even though it can seem like disparate realms, I see so many connection between those two, organizational development and art, and how art could be a vehicle for change and transformation in any organization, really.
Totally agree. I'm a big jazz fan, and
Yeah.
my father was a jazz pianist. And what occurs to me is, like, one of the clients I'm working with right now, they have a brain the size of a planet, and they are seeing so many opportunities for their business, and they're very comfortable sitting in a place of ambiguity and
Yes.
complexity.
Yeah.
But they're beginning to lose some of their people, right? Because sometimes people need structure.
Yeah.
And I would relate that to to jazz in this way. My favorite jazz musician was a Canadian pianist called Oscar Peterson. And he quite famously used to practice 10 hours a day so that he could improvise. All right. And so he played a form of jazz that was always improvising on a theme. But when you listen really carefully to his solos, they didn't just flow completely randomly. They were based upon layers of structures. And so there's at some level, there's a, it can be incredible. It can move to a state of absolute flow. And there was the Montreux Jazz Festival in 76 was an incredible moment with a lot of jazz musicians, and he was there. And the album is the point where the crowd were in rapture in a spontaneous standing ovation at the end of his solo, at the end of one track. But it was structured. And then you get the truly improvisational stuff, the much more, I don't know what you would call it, very freeform jazz. Honestly, it's lost on me, right? Because they lose the structure and they lose the themes, and I don't know what direction they're going in. So I think there's a parallel there for business. It's just interesting to, you can play with that from an organizational development standpoint, as to what level do people want structure? To what level do they need to step out of the box without being too scared? So it's an interesting thing that you can play with it both as a story, but also maybe take them into a choir experience. I wonder if you've thought about taking, clients in your new business and getting them to sing.
Yeah, exactly. And that is what I hoping. I have a client, a big client that I hope we pull this off to sing together, really. But it's kind of a surprise thing. But yeah, when I've done that and I've seen what happens in between people, and that immersive experience is to kind of change your state of mind or build those bridges. What you do basically is that you design with and for people, with and for relation, connection, to make people land in their bodies, to be present. And here, you can't be up in your head thinking about your next mail to answer if you are singing together with a colleague. And that does far more for a group in terms of bonding, forming community. I think it was Victor Borge that said that the fastest way between two hearts is laughter. But I wonder if it's not
Music.
singing, music. And we're forming, it's one of the strongest way to form community. We've done it throughout history, religious services, football stadiums, chanting. It creates a we, the miners before they went down in the mine, right? And it's a flush of biochemicals, of oxytocin, that's good for stress, for, and it's bonding, it's dopamine, it's a serotonin. It's even in the Sahlgrenska Institute, a research that shows that you synchronize heartbeat. So there's some wonky stuff going on in between us, when we're singing. In other words, that's the, like, the old backside of it, there are research behind it, but people feel it. You probably feel it. I read a blog post from you that 2 3 years back about sensio ergo sum. You are because you are feeling something, and then you show some examples from films and music, and then to use that kind of example, it changes your state of mind when you're when or it enhances the messages. If I have listened to, when I listen to Wagner's Tannhäuser, the overture, or the Pilgrimage Choir, I kind of cry every time because I think it's beautiful. I don't cry when I look at good art, or so music has a special place in my heart. And yeah, you have to experience it. So yeah, I will do this kind of leadership development stuff featuring choir singing. That would be one part of the business I'm doing, actually.
I love the fact you can overlap it and not just keep them separate and distinct. And yeah, that was my play on like one of the, as you'll know, one of the phrases that underpins modern philosophy is cogito ergo sum, like I think, therefore I am. And
Exactly.
I don't
There's
think that's actually
paraphrasing
resolving
that.
it. I think it's they feel, I feel, therefore I am, which is the phrase I like. Yeah, when I first started, I love movies and I also like really good soundtracks. And when I first started my blogs, every week I did a, and it was one of them, the one you're talking about, I did for until I kind of ran out of movies. Every week I would do three movies and just called it Movies with Meaning. And but often the meaning is in, it's the meaning is in what it makes you feel. And nothing happens until somebody feels something. So I particularly love though what you're talking about here is the collective experience. It's super powerful, and yeah, it's really, really good. And yeah, my work is all around change and brave change and transformative change. And it's not about the numbers and it's not about the logic. Those have to be done. And you worked in a high competence environment in a, highly regarded large global corporate. And I'm lucky enough to have done a lot of work around those companies. But the really high level stuff is it's all human. And we're not human doings, we are human beings, you know.
Yes, exactly. We're not
I
to
love
do not to
that
be.
piece. In fact, I can't think of any individuals right now, but I'm sure we've both seen this again and again where people create collective experiences with, at concerts, performers will do it and they'll get one side of the auditorium to do one thing, the other side to do the other, and they bring them together. And it, with the right energy and the right leadership, it can be amazing. And my last thought was something that's pointed towards, which I put on one of my blogs, was that there was a piece of, let's say, in quotes, a piece of music a number of years ago called 4 minutes, so many seconds of silence, and from the composer. And effectively, the orchestra conductor would basically tap their baton on their music stand, and then they would all the violinists would just be holding their instrument, etc., and every other member of the orchestra, and then they would all sit in silence for 4 minutes and 22 seconds, and so would the entire theater. And there was just a video of it and panning around the audience and them sitting there, and it was as they settled into it was a, that even that was an amazing collective experience. But they
And
can
then,
they can an amazing, really amazing concert experiences can converge on the spiritual, right? So, but singing in a choir, yeah, I'm getting as enthusiastic about it as you are, just listening to you, full of ideas. So, cool stuff. So what else is going on for you?
what else is going on? I just came from this leadership conversation panel conversation thingy here in Stockholm. We discussed the role of Scandinavian leadership, with its limitations and what that could bring in this kind of messy world we're in. I don't know if that is worthwhile exploring, but there's definitely a two sides of that coin as everything else.
Well, let's, I've just spent a weekend in Amsterdam and reminded myself how much I love the directness of Dutch people compared to the coded language of British English, right? And so speaking to a Swede who has done much of their career at the HQ in southern Sweden of a, global corporate, and your space has been in culture and people and organizational development, right? At a high level. Let's hear it from you. What are the strengths and gaps around Scandinavian leadership, and what can that bring?
Sure. So I was taking the starting point in values, the World Values Index research that is made annually, which looks into the level of kind of traditional versus secular values and self-expressional values versus more survival kind of values. And they're mapping the world out. You can see how kind of a more maybe Middle East here and then Catholic European and Protestant European up in the right-hand corner, there's Nordics and then the most extreme of them all is Sweden. And we think we're kind of mellanmjölk, like average lagom, is a word for Yeah. Not left, not right, but not up, not down, lagom. But that is in a global context quite of, sticking out, if you may. And it's highly driven from a kind of collectivistic, decentralized kind of leadership model, where you have a fair deal of freedom within responsibility, a lot of collaboration is non-hierarchical, etc. Openness and transparent in terms of communication, really. So that is, what encompasses Scandinavian leadership, you could say. And if you build on trust, and what research suggests on trust, on complex issues, systemic, big, entangled, messy problems, is that it needs collaboration and trust. So there seems to be some overlaps, at the other hand, it seems like it has its limitations in terms of when you need a firm, clear, directive, or when things hits the fan, and it's chaos. Consensus is not the thing, What do you think about this? Should we defend ourselves, or should, no, you need an order, basically. You need to do, think, do. So that chaotic moment, I think Scandinavian leadership has its limitation. Once it segues into kind of a realm of complexity, where it's more, you need different perspectives, you need a clear purpose, you need a strong co-creational side, then I think we're quite good at it. It comes to predictable in the complex, complicated domain and simple domain where best practices and stuff like that is needed when things is all worked out already. I think kind of maybe more command and control-ish kind of procedures do as well or better. But within the complex domain, I think there is some good opportunities to it's good there.
That's well, in a general sense, the base of my website are five or six of the 2,000 plus articles I've written, and which are kind of core pieces that evolved over lots of writing and conversations. And one of them is about what I call open leadership. And what you're describing from the positive sense is what I believe is what we need in leadership now globally, right? Which is the open, the humility, right? The sort of openness and curiosity of like, well, working with complexity and uncertainty and being collaborative. And at the same time, yeah, you're absolutely right, is in times of crisis, in times of absolute urgency, you're not going to go around and wait for consensus on what do we do when something's falling on our head, and one of the guests I've had on twice is a guy called Dave Stewart, who was a relatively senior army officer in the British Army. And he and I have had countless conversations about when command and control is absolutely appropriate and when not. And he works on leadership in the UK. So, you've the door is always open for any of the alumni on this show to talk to each other. But it's absolutely fascinating. And I've not done much work in Sweden, but I've worked in many, many countries, and I continue to do so. And I work in English exclusively. My only other language is finance. I'm unfortunately not fluent enough to do business in any other spoken language. And I find even within the English-speaking world, there is massive variation on styles of leadership. And what I am finding is that what they used to teach in business schools, when I was growing up, like 30, 40 years ago, it's just so dated. The age of like the omnipotent CEO has all the answers and passes orders down, and you follow instructions. The world is moving far too fast for that now. So it sounds like that Swedish style, is one that could be a big export success. Meanwhile, you can be importing, to be honest, Business is simple, people are complex. So you and I understand the distinction between complicated and complex.
Absolutely.
Complicated, you can put a process in place for,
Yeah,
right? And
absolutely.
that's what the army does so well. They train people so that when something hits the fan, they know exactly what to do and they know exactly what everybody's role is. And they just get it done. And that's what the military does. And I would imagine the Swedish military is trained up for that, despite the archetype you're talking about. So fascinating, fascinating stuff. Anyway, I see I can we're on a video call here for the podcast audience. I see you're quite tired at the end of the day, so I shall allow us to wrap up in about half an hour so you can go and decompress in the evening, as you said to me before we went on air. So it's been an absolute pleasure, and I would like to always leave my guests with the opportunity to give some last thoughts to the audience.
Yeah, cool. Well, then I leave with this story of this Finnish leader that came to me at Kiev after a long day of consensus, common ground creating workshop that I facilitated, and he seemed a little bit troubled, and then he said that, okay, Petri, you Swedes, you talk, then you take decision. We Finns, we take decision, then we talk. Think that is a great distinction between, within the variety within Scandinavia. There is a variety within each country, obviously. But yeah, I think that was a beautiful story, and I want to share that as a kind of last point. And thanks for having me, and happy to continue any conversation from what this might have been sparking, yeah, your listeners. Thank you.
Okay, appreciate it. Thanks, and have a great evening.
Thank you. Take care now. Bye.
Bye.